At least 110 million out of the 600 million people living without access to electricity in Africa live in urban areas. Most are within a stone's throw from existing power grids and infrastructure. So the question is, why are these potential consumers not connected to the formal grid? Online is Rebecca Shirley, Research Director of Power for All. Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
This is an interesting question because in South Africa, and I can't vouch for anywhere else in the world, people in our informal settlements connect themselves to the grid, albeit at great risk.
Yes, absolutely, and that's the case oftentimes in Kenya, where I live as well. What happens in those particular instances, though, is, you know, consumers in these informal settlements are often not able to benefit from the lifeline or the low lifeline rates or subsidies, that are available to low-income customers. Oftentimes, you'll have multiple households connecting to the same meter, resulting in higher total consumption at the meter. So oftentimes, these households even end up paying disproportionately more for electricity, and that's those that do connect, and there's a broader, much broader number that don't even make it to that stage.
This talks to a bigger issue, doesn't it? In developing countries, Kenya, South Africa, I think we can relate to each other on that a common complaint amongst people who do get electricity are the exorbitant prices and the very rusty infrastructure that provides us with electricity. Does this talk to the fact that we need to get alternative energy, which is much cheaper and cleaner, sooner than later?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's one area we can definitely agree. We have similar issues here in Kenya in terms of the cost of electricity, but also in terms of the reliability. And by that, I mean the quality of service. And there's a couple of different metrics that power systems and utility systems engineers use to characterize quality of service, like, you know, how often we have outages and the duration of those outages and so on and so on. So there are a couple of different issues there, but I think to your point, it really does speak to the need for revamping and revising a lot of our electricity systems. And one way of thinking about doing that is through liberalizing the market, so making more opportunity available for other types of service providers to come on board that can probably do these kinds of things a little bit more cheaply and a little bit faster as well, providing better quality of service.
Do you find that a lot of electricity suppliers in Africa, they have vested interests? I mean, they make a lot of money from supplying irregular electricity to us at very high costs. Do you think that because of their vested interests, they're actually against what we're talking?
You know, I think that's a fantastic point. And oftentimes there are internal incentives that sort of act in an antagonistic fashion towards advancement of the technology. Just in terms of major changes that are happening right now in the energy space, of course we're seeing three major trends, right? We're seeing, everyone knows about digitization. Everything is going digital. So the way that we even do metering, now you can have prepaid meters, you can have automated meters. So it's very, very easy now to understand what consumers are using and when they're using it, and that should make it such that services are able to be provided in a more efficient way. Alongside digitization, we also have decentralization happening, and so there's a lot of new technology now that's making it such that energy services can be provided right at the source of the need. So there's, you know, solar home system companies, there's mini grid companies, there's solar lantern companies that are just kind of canvassing now sub-Saharan Africa, and there's so much opportunity for decentralized energy technology. Rightly, as you said, both of these advances, digitization and decentralization, are sort of they're a turn away from the way that we normally think about electricity provision through sort of centralized means. And so I don't necessarily think about it as an either or an or, and I you know, try to stay away from that language of on-grid and off-grid, but I really think what it's about is trying to encourage more integrated energy planning, where we can think about how do these new technology solutions not necessarily act in a competitive fashion to business as usual, but how can they complement business as usual? How can utilities still find ways to earn revenue streams, how can they find viable revenue streams through advances in technology as opposed to in spite of, you know? That's kind of the way I would phrase it.
Yeah, in fact, I mean, I think everybody will go here to the integrated approach, although it does, in the short term, throw up problems. I mean, in Cape Town, for example, we had a lot of power outages a few years ago in South Africa, so people cut down electricity. So our local council now has put up the price of electricity because people are using less. We're going through a major drought, one of the worst in 100 years. Everybody uses about 50 litres of water a day, cut down on water. So the council puts up the price of water. Do you think we have to really watch out for how civic organisations, governments, local governments deal with this in terms of total integration, that they don't keep on levying these heavy prices on consumers?
Absolutely. From my point of view, the customer is always, and the consumer is always the main goal, and making sure that we're providing affordable quality service. You know, that issue that you just talked about, California, where I spent a lot of time and studied, goes through the same kind of thing. You know, a lot of these advances, another major advance that we could talk about is happening in the efficiency space. And now, you know, lights, it costs almost nothing in terms of kilowatt hours to keep lights on. And so we're seeing all of these efficient appliances that are making it such that consumers, as you rightfully said, are using less and less instead of more and more, depending on where they are in terms of access to electricity and how many years or how much time they've had access to electricity. We tend to find mature consumers tend to spend less. And so in California, you've seen a move towards what we call decoupling, where a utility's revenue stream is decoupled from or detached from the actual sale of kilowatt hours, such that the utility is still able to reap returns on its investment, and customers are still able to benefit from efficiency and efficient appliances. And so I think innovations like that in terms of business models and in terms of how we design electricity rate bases are really, really critical at this point.
Rekha, do you think that in countries like Kenya and South Africa, which are rated as developing countries, we are actually maybe in a better position than states like California to change the game?
I absolutely 100% agree. You see, the thing is, when we talk about this idea of the utility of the future, right, what's the utility going to look like in 10 years, 15 years' time, even sooner than that, given all of these advances in technology? We're really sort of changing the game, right, of what it means to be an energy service provider. Now, I mean, in states like New York, you can, there's, because of things like blockchain even, you can just have peer-to-peer transactions, and you can get all of your electricity services met without even having to go through utility at all. So the game is really changing. And like you said, I actually think that in countries like Kenya and other low-energy access countries, where the grid extent is already fairly limited, we have an opportunity to leapfrog into a space where we're taking advantage of digitization and decentralization and these other types of transformation, as opposed to reacting to them decades down the line. I completely agree.
Do you think that one of the challenges is convincing local officials, and I'm not talking about politicians, I'm talking about people on the coalface who actually have to do the work?
Yes, absolutely. The conversation, the dialogue is so critical, because really at the end of the day, the technology is there. The digital technologies are there. Decentralized technologies are there. The issue is really not so much about the technology. It's really, as you said, about the conversations and about changing mindsets, about paradigm shifts. And so at the end of the day, it's all about people and culture and bringing people from different points of view and from different stakeholder representations together to talk about what the way forward looks like. So at Call for All, for instance, where I'm the director of research, we're doing a lot of thinking about this idea of what does the utility of the future in a low energy access country actually look like. And we're doing a lot of research and sort of modeling and thinking through what are the actual values, economic values to a grid operator that things like mini grids or solar home systems can provide. And then how do we think about how that relates to the way that we do policy and the way that we do finance. And what we'd like to do is bring a lot of those key players into a singular room and have conversation about this, exactly as you said. And it's not just about the government heads. Really, you need to think about the rural electrification agencies, the rural development agencies, urban development agencies. And so many people need to be a part of this conversation that I think to this point aren't yet quite part of the conversation.
And of course, the interesting thing is that people who haven't really had much access to electricity before seem to be more open to new ideas and innovation than those with existing systems. I suppose people just don't like change.
People just don't like change. It's true. But I, exactly as you're saying, you know, every kind of new way or new business model that has come up for thinking about energy service provision, people have caught on and people have bought into it. So, for instance, you know, thinking about this urban context that we started the conversation in, what a lot of people are doing that I'm seeing here in a lot of urban informal settlements in Kenya is instead of connecting to another household that does have a metered connection or doing that for yourself, because oftentimes the cost of connection itself can be very high. In fact, here in Kenya, it's about 150 USD per connection, and that's subsidized, which is still really unaffordable upfront for many. So instead of something like that, a lot of people are moving towards these pay-go options, where you pay as you go. You put an initial down payment on the product, and then you have these monthly payments over the course of a year or 18 months or 2 years. And that idea, you know, it's revolutionary. It's only something that's been around for the past, say, you know, 5 to 6 years, largely because of mobile money. And people have really caught on to this idea. And I think you're absolutely right that I think when innovation steps in, people oftentimes are willing to step up to the plate and to try something new. And what's important is to make sure that once someone has tried something new, that they're getting a fantastic product, that there's after-sales service, that there is maintenance, that there is an opportunity to connect with and to communicate with your service provider. And so from the point of view of a practitioner, it's really important that they are making sure that they're thinking about customer protection and customer services as well.
Rebecca, final question. How quickly do you think we can turn it around? 110 million of 600 million people no access to electricity. How quickly can we get the numbers up?
I think we can do it pretty quickly. I mean, we're already trying. The whole aim, right, is to achieve universal energy access by 2030. That's 12 short years away. And I think, as I said before, a lot of the technology is there. It's really about the finance and it's about the policy, I would argue. And so getting people into the right rooms to have the right conversations that can help us to unlock finance for a lot of these local solar home system and mini-grid companies, and to create policy incentives that encourage decentralized technologies and other solutions, and then to think about ways of integrating those solutions into our already existing centralized frameworks, that's where I think the work to be done has still lies. But I'm a believer that we can do this in short stead.
Rebecca Shirley, Research Director, Power for All, talking to the fact that 110 million out of 600 million people live without access to electricity in Africa in urban areas, but it's not all negative. Lots of good things can be done. Rebecca Shirley, thanks for chatting to us.
Thanks for having me.
Drive Time 91.3.